Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. When the summer season arrives in St. Louis, you can bet William Shakespeare is not far behind. We'll explain that a little bit later. But first, just because the school year is about over, it doesn't mean we shouldn't be giving thought to the continuing education of our youngsters. That education does not always pertain to the three R's. While test scores are important, other attributes may be even more so in helping youngsters achieve success in life. Over the years, these other qualities have become clear to veteran educator Thomas Herr, emeritus head of school at the New City School and scholar in residence at the University of Missouri-St. Louis's College of Education. He is the author of The Formative Five, Fostering Grit, Empathy, and Other Success Skills That Students Need. Tom, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Don. It's a treat to be here.
You know, I'm going to read a sentence in a moment that I think may catch some people might find surprising because it comes from an educator. I'll read it. It is, "Who you are in life is more important than what you know." It's a key to your book, but explain it for our audience.
Absolutely. I love that sentence. And basically, the book is written from the premise that what we need to be doing is preparing students to succeed in life, not just to do well in school. They need to do well in school, but that should be the floor, not the ceiling. So in the book, I've identified what I call the formative five, and these are the skills, the virtues that are going to help kids become successful adults, the kind of people that we want to live next door to, that we want to have our friends marry, that we want to have as partners. I talk about empathy, self-control, integrity, embracing diversity and grit. Basically, who you are is more important than what you know.
Okay, we'll go into more detail on each of these qualities in a moment or two, but how do you teach this stuff?
Well, that's the good question. Actually, you teach it in a couple ways. The first one is it needs to be consciously thought about and addressed. In each one of my chapters, I've got suggestions for principles and strategies for teachers, but it's really a mindset. It is reflecting that these qualities are important and looking for opportunities to just jump ahead for a bit. When we talk about integrity, one of the things we can do is not only look at what happened in history, the battles, the generals, the dates, who won, the economic downturns. We can look at the motivation. Why did people feel the way that they feel and what caused them to act that way? So what I don't want to do is suggest that teachers and principals need to do more. They already work too hard. What I am suggesting is that we can refocus how we teach and what we teach in a way that helps kids be successful at age 28, 38, and 58.
Well, how do you determine that success? I mean, that's a large number of years before you know whether the lessons took.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting. When I wrote this book, it took me about a year to actually write it, but the research, in quotes, lasted more than probably 10 or 15 years. And what I did beginning was asking people how they define success. I sent out an email to hundreds of folks, and it was really interesting hearing the responses. So I used those as data, those responses. But then I also looked at our kids at New City School. It's a wonderful school, good people. And I saw kids who were 3 who became 13. I was there 34 years, so I saw children become adults. And it was really interesting to me to see that while we taught kids how to read, write, and calculate, what we really did was teach them how to be good people, and that's what success is. It's not how much money you make. It's what kind of a person you are.
You have a long list of words in the book that might have been used as part of your five. How did you come to these five? I mean, compassion. Why isn't compassion one of your five?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Compassion is a really powerful one, as would creativity. Mm-hmm. What I did is I tried to pick five words into which these other things could be, if you will, subsumed. So when you talk about empathy, if we really develop empathy in children, as I think we can, as we should, they're going to have compassion. That's mm-hmm. part of it.
Well, so you've come up with these five, and They are good words, but I still feel somehow that people just looking at those five aren't going to get the fact that they also mean other things.
Well, that's an interesting observation. Hopefully, if people read the book, they will see that embedded in there are the kinds of qualities about which we're talking. You know, when you say to people, what do you want your child to be when she grows up, we're talking about these kinds of skills.
Yeah. You have an interesting I suppose I should use past tense for you at the New City School. You have an interesting report card there in that not all of the emphasis is placed on the grades. Tell us about that.
Well, it comes back again to what you measure is what you value. And we began talking probably 30 years ago when we were investigating Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences about the personal intelligences, intrapersonal, which is really knowing yourself, capitalizing on your strengths and weaknesses, interpersonal, which is reading other people. And we felt that those were really the most important life skills that we could teach, and we knew that the typical report card is reading, math, and language, and then there's a box on page 4, and it says, works well with others, doesn't run with scissors. Mm-hmm. And we said, hold on a second. If we really believe these are important, we need to start off the parent-teacher conference with them. So whether a child at the New City School is a 3-year-old or a 6th grader or terminal grade, the first page is the personal intelligences, and we look at confidence, motivation, effort and work habits, appreciation for diversity, teamwork, and we begin the dialogue talking about those things, and we know that by doing that, we are more likely to focus on them in the classroom, and likewise, parents are more likely to appreciate them beyond the 3 R's.
Are we talking about getting this whole process started at the age 3 to 6?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. The one thing we know is that the younger we can educate children, the better it's going to take, the longer it's going to last. And so certainly, I would hope that every preschool, every elementary teacher looks at these skills, whether or not they use my book, but develops these with kids. But then likewise, high schoolers, we can do that as well. I was teaching at the other end of the scale, teach at the University of Missouri St. Louis, as you pointed out, and I was teaching a graduate class this past spring, and one of the things we talked about a great deal there was empathy and how we can develop that with our students, and how the reality is, if we want to have that developed with our students, we, the adults in the building, the teachers, the principals, need to develop empathy too. So this isn't something we do to kids, we do it with them.
That was another point that I wanted to make with regard to the teachers and teaching these kinds of things. A lot of the teachers, I'm afraid and sorry to say, will have to learn some of these qualities as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're right. I write a column in Education Leadership every month, and probably 3 or 4 years ago, I wrote one about bullying, and the title of it was Who's the Bully in the Teacher's Lounge? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reality is we're all human beings. We all have frailties. But if you're going to implement this, I think the most successful way to do it is you are doing it with kids and with the faculty. So it becomes a school-wide quest. Part of that is parents are engaged and involved. When I would do back-to-school nights at New City School, I would always try to get the parents engaged. And one time I remember I gave every parent who came in a 3x5 card, and I said, write down on this card what's the one thing you want your child to get at New City School. Mm-hmm. And I collected them and I reported back. And to be fair, they didn't say reading, writing, calculating, probably because they assumed that. What they said more than anything were two factors. One was confidence, and the other was care for others. Mm-hmm. I thought, bingo, they've got it already.
Well, what is your advice then to parents with regard to teaching these qualities?
Well, there's an explicitness that I think needs to happen at both the classroom and at the dinner table, and that is we need to talk about these things. I wrote a book, and you interviewed me a few years ago on grit.
Grit, yeah.
And one of the things I talked about then was we needed to have the vocabulary out. Same thing with the formative five. I think at the dinner table, depending on the age of the child, parents need to talk about that. They need to give examples of people they respect and admire who are embodying these traits, and they need to talk about times when they did it too. To circle back to integrity, for example, a distinction between honesty and integrity, and we want kids to be honest, but a distinction is that integrity is visibly standing up, stepping out, taking a stand. Well, parents need to let kids know when they see somebody on the news that they admire who does that, and they need to let kids know when they do it themselves. We're all role models, whether or not we choose to be.
A couple of things occur to me in today's world. Number one, families more often than not don't sit down together at the dinner table, and often if they do, the kids might be preoccupied with a device.
Unfortunately, sad but true. And, you know, and maybe a vow that people would make is at least a couple nights a week we're going to have a dinner table where nothing's plugged in. Mm-hmm. I mean, that alone would be a step forward.
Yeah. Of course, in the wireless world, it doesn't have to be plugged in.
I'm showing my age.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to digress for just a moment here because I think discussion about education these days has to take a look at what's going on nationally. I mean, you were dependent, education is dependent on funds from the federal government, mm-hmm. state governments. And I'll be reading a news headline a little bit talking about plans by the Trump administration to reduce funds for various parts of education. How are you looking at that picture today with what's going on with an education secretary who isn't very much plugged into that world.
Candidly, it's very discouraging. Yeah. It is not the way certainly I would like things to evolve. But to back up, we play the cards that were dealt. Mm-hmm. And this isn't a situation that any educator that I know would choose, but we do the best we can. And one of the things we know is that while teachers should be paid more, absolutely, the relationship between how much money is spent in achievement isn't as clear as people think. So what I really want are committed teachers in classrooms making a difference for kids. Now, the more we can pay them, the better, the more likely we are to keep them. But the reality is good teachers often do their work regardless of what's going on around them.
Mm-hmm. And not much people like yourself can do other than just play the card you dealt.
Well, that's right. I wrote an article once and I said that every principal has a choice to determine when to be a buffer and when to be a conduit. Yeah. And sometimes you need to be a buffer to the outside world.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of these specific attributes and qualities that you want to generate. I'm going to start with the last one on the list because it's the one with which you might be most familiar because, as you indicated, you wrote a book about it. Grit. For folks who didn't read the book or hear our last discussion on this subject, what do you mean when you talk about grit?
Well, grit is basically simply tenacity. It is not giving up. It is recognizing that success doesn't come easily and that if you want something, you're going to have to work at it. Getting out of your comfort zone. One of the things I talk about are good failures. And good failure simply means that it's a failure from which you learn. I want kids being willing to take risks, willing to know that they may not get things right, not choosing the easy route. And when you talk with people, Don, and ask what is success in virtually any arena, it's not the person who is the smartest or the strongest. It's the person who's the most tenacious, who hangs in. And I think that's a quality that kids need and we can develop. It's always been the case, but particularly in what I call a trophy society, where every kid gets a trophy on every team. Yeah. We need to teach kids that learning should be enjoyable, it should be fun, but it's going to be hard to.
Sticking with the sports analogy, good coaches will tell their players that it's just as important to learn how to lose as it is to learn how to win.
Absolutely. We learn from our mistakes and our failures.
Yeah. I'm talking with Tom Herr, and he is the author of The Formative Five, Fostering Grit, Empathy, and Other Success Skills Students Need. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you would prefer to send a tweet, we'll take one at STL on air. The subject is instilling qualities in young people to help them achieve success in life. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our continuing conversation with Tom Herr. Tom, I have an email here from Brandy who writes, "As schools continue to reassess their goals and outcomes, today's topic proves to be timely and necessary. Both the school year and summer are the right time to consider, practice, and celebrate soft skills such as empathy, grit, courage, humanity, curiosity, and justice." You're certainly not going to quarrel with Brandy.
Absolutely,
on that.
Yeah, that's right on. One of the things we've learned is that the achievement gap between wealthier kids and poor kids often really exacerbates during the summer because kids who have means have experiences that facilitate that. Well, it's the same thing with the formative five. It's always been, I think, a danger when we just simply let kids wither and choose what they want to do without enough direction. And today's technological offerings make that even more of a danger.
But, you know, there is some withering that takes place during the summer months. When they're out of school, it's a long period of time to not have that discipline and the books in their hand and that sort of thing. What should be going on during the summer from the parents' point of view and even from the schools, even though it's not in session?
Well, I would come back to what we talked about 10 minutes ago or so, and that is I think we should not overlook the power of the dinner table. I think families are wonderful educators and sitting down and talking very explicitly, what did you do today? What happened? What did you learn? What would you do differently? Those are wonderful, wonderful discussions. And I think to the degree that parents can take advantage of summer opportunities, many of which are free, and take their kids to experiences maybe that they would not have themselves benefit from. One of the things that I learned when talking about multiple intelligences is often you will have parents who are very athletic or very much into art, and sometimes they channel kids into those same interests without recognizing that the child may have a different interest. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest that over the course of the summer, one of the things we can look for are different kinds of experiences for kids. And we say to kids, the goal is not to be proficient. The goal is not to be first. The goal is to learn, and that learning means you're going to make mistakes, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. In your experience and over the years that you've been in education, have you found that parents are spending more time or less time with their kids these days?
Unfortunately, I think many of them are spending less time. I think that the world has gotten a bit more intense, and also electronics make it easier to give kids distractions.
Mm-hmm. And that they're certainly omnipresent in the world of young people today. Let's take a call. Dennis is going to join us from Overland. He has a point he'd like to make. Dennis, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, well, I think your guest has been on before, and I think I probably said the same thing the last time. First of all, I really appreciate his approach, and thank you for having him on.
Yeah.
John Wooden, when early on I started using his book with kids that I was, well, my own child, and then all the kids I coached and people that I, you know, I just would flip that little book to them and say, our parents, I say, just keep it around the house, you know. I know that Bill Walton and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, in the front part of the book, they said they got tired of all his little aphorisms, and then when they were raising their kids, they started using all those same aphorisms. And it seems to tie in with a lot of your what you're talking about today.
Thank you.
That brings us back to the sports analogy, doesn't it?
That's right.
Wouldn't very, very effective in that area. Charlie has a tweet here, persistence and the ability to learn and adopt. One of the things that students need to be successful, according to Charlie. Again, those are other qualities that aren't among your five, but they are important qualities.
Well, in some respects, that's grit. That's hanging in, not giving up. And too often, if kids don't learn that, they choose the easy channel. Mm-hmm. And they do well, but they haven't grown because they haven't tested themselves.
Yeah. And again, the question is, what do students need to be successful? Kate writes, critical thinking. Now, this is something in today's media world that we talk about a lot, because teaching kids at a very young age to understand what they're seeing in the media, what is, well, I hate to use the term, what is fake news and what isn't. That's another term that could be used.
Absolutely. And in a classroom, when we are pursuing these, you know, when we're looking at empathy, for example, what does that mean to see things from another's perspective? Mm-hmm. By definition, I think there's an element of critical thinking there, because kids learn how to take information, how to look at it objectively, and how to begin to discern. Too often, coming back to empathy, we tend to think that everybody is the same way we are. One of the suggestions I use, and I will share this with your listeners because I think it's a real easy one and a fun one. One of the ways to look at empathy is to ask kids to write down the names of four or five people they know with whom they're not really good friends, and then four or five people with whom they are good friends, and then speculate on what those people might want for a birthday present. And, of course, what we find is that kids without much empathy think that everybody wants the same thing they want. And it's a good way to talk about what other people might want, why they might want different presents, to get kids to see that there's more than one perspective in the world. That's an aspect of critical thinking.
This your book, The Formative Five, is basically written for principals and for teachers, as you've indicated.
Yes.
And I understand from what I've read about it that 69,000 copies have been distributed by an organization that deals
with
this.
That's right. Yep, yep.
What about getting it in the hands of parents?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I have a number of friends who are parents who have the book and say to me, this is really great because the content is very applicable to them as well. And I would hope that's the case. And when you think about it, children's most important teachers are their parents. Mm-hmm. So here's an opportunity for parents to see what can happen in the classroom and look at what they can then use in their homes to support and reinforce.
Right. We have an email here from Spencer in Belleville, writes, how can you jumpstart a sense of grit in a kid who is otherwise very shy, rarely leaves his or her comfort zone?
Well, the first thing you do is you talk about grit. You explicitly put it out there as a goal. You talk about why it's important, and you help kids understand how one acquires it. And in my book, Fostering Grit, and actually in this book, I talk about some specific things teachers can do. They can have a rubric in the classroom, and this could be for any age kid, where children look at a task and then they self-identify how hard that is and how they're feeling. What we're trying to get kids to do is to learn to be gritty, if you will, when things get tough. My experience, too, particularly with older kids, is they will often be very gritty in some sectors and not in others. You'll have the kid who will work on for hours on an essay, but wants to give up on the math problem as soon as it's hard. Yeah. Or a kid will practice his trombone a long time, but doesn't want to bother doing writing.
Yeah, there are some books have been written recently saying you got to put 10,000 hours into
something. That's right. That's Malcolm Gladwell.
Yep. Gladwell, exactly. Yep. Right. And that's an important point. And he has some wonderful examples in that book.
Yeah. He uses the Beatles and Bill Gates jump out as people who whose success is in large part a function of the thousands and thousands of hours they put in. And you and I, Don, we're probably like the average person. We watch the Olympics and we see this gymnast and we think, wow, how did they get that way? Well, they got that way because they spent thousands and thousands of hours.
That's what it takes. Like it or not, that's what it takes. Let's take another call. Sheila will join us from Richmond Heights. Sheila, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for having such wonderful guests. I never am disappointed when I tune in to you all.
Great. Thank you.
I would like to thank you so much. Where are you signing books? Or where? And what I believe is that we're all teachers and we're all students. So we all need a copy of your book. And one thing I'd like to add before you tell me where you're going to be signing books and where I can get one is I read a book called Dumbing Us Down years ago, written by an educator. I was told he was the Teacher of the Year in New York City. And then he did this speech in his acceptance speech. It's called Dumbing Us Down. Are you familiar with that?
I am not familiar with it. I will write it down and pursue it afterwards because it sounds intriguing.
Well, he said basically the way the system's working, we're dumbing our children down. And it sounds like the opposite of what you're talking about in your book. And, you know, we all need to be as proactive as possible to teach kindness and
Absolutely.
Creativity. And, you know, I'm just so excited you're on the show. Where do we get a copy of the book and where are you signing books?
Well, I don't know about the signing. I mean, you can get a copy of the book at Amazon. You can probably go to the library and get a free copy, too, I hope.
Oh, good.
All right.
Well, thank you so much, everyone.
Sheila, thank you so much for your call. Let's take
the best show. Best show in St. Louis.
There you go. Thank you so much. Maybe you ought to keep Sheila on the line. I like
it's
where you're going,
heart.
Sheila. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Another of your formative five, Tom Herr, is embracing diversity. Interesting to be among the five, and particularly in today's world and in this community. Tell me more. Elaborate on that for me.
Well, and it is, as you'll notice, and as I specify, of all the five success skills, diversity is the only one that is preceded with another word, embracing. Mm-hmm. And I did that consciously because I think everybody would say, absolutely, I want my kid to be empathetic, have self-control, have integrity, and have grit. But the diversity is still not as pervasively accepted in our society, and I think that's a big mistake. Mm-hmm. And my argument would be that if we're preparing kids for success in the world, however that success is defined, they're going to be better off if they not only can work with people who are different than them, different color, different background, different economic status, different sexual orientation. They're going to be better if they can appreciate those people, if they can celebrate the differences. And there's a good deal of research now that comes out that looks at how teams function, what causes a team to function well. And the ability to have different kinds of people in a team is actually a good predictor of success. But, of course, for that to happen, you've got to be able to appreciate the different learning styles, the different backgrounds, the different qualities that people bring.
You know, it's one thing to teach that and work on that in the classroom, which is what you're proposing. However, sometimes those lessons are contradicted at home.
And that is really unfortunate. Yeah. And that's where I think as an educator I have a responsibility to say to families, this is important, and I'm happy to have that dialogue with anybody who says, why is that? What I'm really focused on, what the book is focused on, is not the grade kids get at the end of the semester or where they even go to the next school. It's what kind of adults they are. Mm-hmm. And in today's world, diversity is no longer an option. We are going to be living with, working with, and acting around people who are different than us.
It's another reason, it seems to me, though, why it's important for this to get into the hands of parents, because if,
yes,
you know, so much happens in the home, and kids often grow up to be parents because of what they learn from their parents.
Absolutely.
That's the only way they can learn how to do that. Okay, Dennis emails here. Would you comment on how the arts can help achieve the goals in your book?
Oh, I think the arts are critically important. From a multiple intelligences perspective, there are many kids who will understand things better through art and can do a better job of expressing themselves through art. Likewise, if you're teaching these kinds of skills, art can become a really important factor. Picking up on the diversity, be very interesting to look at art around the world and what does that tell us about the different conditions, the different lives that people live. There's a wonderful book called Material World, and it's not really art in a way, but it is in a way. And what it is photographs of families standing posed with all the possessions they own from 30 different countries around the world. And you will see families from the United States with several TVs, several cars. And then you see a family living in an adobe-like structure that has not a whole lot of material goods. But guess what? All these families are smiling, and there's love with all of them. Mm-hmm. That's not art, and yet it is, because it's looking at reality in lots of different ways. So in my classroom, the classroom that I want in my school, whether I'm a teacher or I'm a student, the formative five are going to be addressed, but they're going to be addressed in an environment that is art-rich, both music, movement, and visual art.
You know, some people might think, given a discussion like this, that you're putting intellectual development in a secondary position.
And I'm nodding no. I hear that. Absolutely not. I mean, the people who work for me will tell you that despite whatever charms I may have had, I was really a pain about colons and semicolons. Yeah. So I get it. And I would argue, in fact, that in today's texting world and email world, the ability to write is even a more important skill. So in no way is this a downplaying of the scholastics. It's simply saying they're not sufficient. They're not enough. That should be the start, but not the finish.
Mm. What sort of a response? I mean, this is indicated widely distributed. What sort of response have you had from principals and teachers?
Well, the feedback that I've gotten is really very positive. Now, probably if somebody doesn't like it, they didn't bother to contact
sure.
me. But I've gotten lots and lots of good feedback. I've been going around 2-3 times a month giving presentations at schools and conferences. Mm-hmm. I'm going to Dubai in the fall.
Oh, wow.
And what I think has happened is that this is resonating with educators for so long, going back to 2001 when George Bush pushed forward No Child Left Behind. What we've tended to do, even though we didn't want to, was view kids solely in terms of stay nines. Test scores became what was the most important thing in schools. So lots of public schools, as you know, dismissed, laid off music teachers, art teachers. Well, it's a tragedy. And likewise, the kinds of things about which I'm talking, whatever attention they used to get, that became downplayed because it wasn't on a test. Mm-hmm. So I think educators in general are saying, we need this. We want it. It's a useful tool. And as you suggested earlier, I wrote it in a way that it would be very teacher-friendly, principal-friendly, and I think parent-friendly. It's not an academic tome. It's got a lot of footnotes, but it's written for people to be able to read it and then do something with it.
We rank fairly low on the list in the Western world in terms of our education and how successful we are.
Yes.
Who is doing it right?
Well, the countries that are doing it right, you know, Finland gets the most credit.
Yeah.
It's a small, very homogeneous country. The major difference there, aside from size and homogeneity, is the orientation that they give to teaching and how valuable and how important it is in society. Unfortunately, too often in our culture, going into teaching isn't considered a success. I know too many, this is real, I hate to even say it, too many friends of mine who are teachers who say, well, I don't want my kid to be a teacher. And that's because I would argue not they're not paid enough, although they're not paid enough. It's because too often we haven't created schools and situations where the profession is praised and given the recognition and respect that it needs. I tried to do that. The most important factor in my school was not me. It wasn't the building. It wasn't the curriculum. It wasn't multiple intelligences. It was those teachers. And if I could get good teachers and have them feel supported and inspired, kids were going to learn.
Right. In our society, a marginal athlete can make more in 1 year than a teacher can make in a lifetime.
Yes.
Let's take a couple more calls as time allows. We'll bring in Dan calling from St. Louis. Dan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering, you guys talked about, you know, evaluating your sources and fake news, and I was just wondering what you see in trends of education as far as librarians' involvement. And I know in St. Louis City they've begun to expand their libraries after cutting back And I also know that in Chicago public schools they are really cutting back on their librarians, and some schools don't even have them. Can you let me know what you think about that?
Oh, I think that's terrible. I mean, the library should be every kid's favorite room in a school. Libraries should be places where kids go on weekends and evenings. And the librarian is more than somebody who just says, oh, here's where the book is. The library is somebody who reads to kids, who knows what kinds of books kids like, who basically creates an interest in not just linguistics, but in learning. Again, the New City School, we've got a multiple intelligences library because we know that kids learn in lots of different ways. But the library really is the lead learner and the person who helps kids learn.
You know, it's interesting that some communities are enlightened enough to be making libraries community centers.
Yes,
now.
Yes, absolutely.
They come in for other reasons, but oh my God, there are some books here.
That's right.
And that's the way it works. Another quick call from Nick. He's calling from University City. Go ahead, Nick. You're on the air.
Thank you. So going back to the grit thing and, you know, putting in the hours, I'm a scientist at Wash U, and one of the things that always bothers me when I talk to people about what I do is that they say, oh, you must be really smart, and that's the only reason why you can be a scientist. And generally, that's not the case. I mean, I know a lot of people who, you know, are just average people that are also scientists, and it's because, much like a carpenter or a welder or any one of these other professions, where they put the hours in it to learn their particular topic, their particular craft, I mean, that's how you, you know, get to this stage. And it's not often because you're an Einstein or some other genius. It's just because you decided that this is what you wanted to do, and you put the time in to actually get it done. And I think that that creates a lot of barriers when you have a scientist talking to someone who, you know, isn't educated in science.
I agree with that, and I think it's also a form of defeatism, if you will. I can look at you and say, well, you're smarter than I am, therefore I don't need to expend the energy. If the reality, however, is it's work, that has a real different implication. There's a great story that may be apocryphal, but I've heard it lots and lots of different places. Purportedly, if you go to Asia and you ask kids who are the smartest students in the room, everybody points to, you know, these three people. And if you go to the United States and you ask who are the smartest kids, they point to the three people. The difference is if you ask the kids in the United States, why are they the smartest? The kids say, oh, well, they're born that way. That's who they are. The kids in Asia say it's because they work the hardest.
Hmm. Makes sense. We only have 30 seconds left. Kelly writes here, often the most successful people are not kind. Are we setting the kids up for a world that does not exist? Can you answer that in 15 seconds?
Oh, my goodness, no. We all need to be kind, and empathy is a quality that I think everybody needs. Respect for diversity is something that if we give it, we get it back.
All right, Tom Herr, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Interesting discussion. I hope a lot of parents out there are listening today. He is the author of The Formative Five, Fostering Grit, Empathy, and Other Success Skills That Students Need. Coming up next, Shakespeare's The Winter's Tale. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.